let's get this going. I was going to shoot this on a ScreenFlow and be on a computer, but you know what? I want to do it live because it makes more sense. I can move, I can demonstrate, we can cut to film when I want to show you something because it saves me time and it will save you time. And some of this stuff is already pre-recorded, but this is about as live, boys and girls, as it gets. And my topic today is why movement and mobility, if you will, is so important for a tennis player, number one. And number two, what we're gonna really kind of start with the introduction is that all athletes are athletes. So a tennis player is an athlete. Now, if I were to take a tennis player and clone him and make another player and only take one of those players and work on his movement, his strength and conditioning, his speed, his athletic skill set, and make him a better athlete, and then put those two back on the tennis court together, when they played, who do you think would win? Obviously, the one that became a better athlete. Because when we are out on that tennis court, when we're running, we're sprinting, we're going backwards, we're side shuffling, we're hitting forehands, we're hitting backhands, all of these movements are athletic movements. Now, we've taken these rudimentary archetype movements and we've turned them into something special like a forehand or a backhand. But when we really break them down, they are movements that are based off of your lunge, your squat, your bend, your turn, your deadlift, all of these basic movements. So if we can take a tennis player, which is someone playing obviously a specific sport, and understand that is specializing in movement, and then go back and say, okay, well, if this tennis player is specializing in movement, then what is his base level? Well, the base level is gonna be that movement. So often we look at these athletes, whether it's a football player, a soccer player, a tennis player, a basketball player, and we believe that making them a better at their sport is sometimes the best thing to do. Now, obviously the tennis player needs to hit a lot of forehands, a lot of backhands, a lot of serves, but it's kind of like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, yeah? If it's crooked and we only focus on the top floor, then we're not gonna get that much of a result, and thus we really focus on the infrastructure, bringing the building back straight, and then when we go to the top floor and we want to make it all beautiful so we can see the sunset, then we can focus on those small, minute little things. Now, as an athlete plays a sport, those small, minute little things are extremely important. That is what makes them special. That is what brings them from high school to college, or from college to pro, or from high school straight to pro. They need those specific skill sets in their sport. So by no means am I saying that they're not important. However, if the infrastructure is not sound, then we can never build that second layer, that specialized layer of that movement. And we know through so many studies right now that if an athlete or a person cannot squat, cannot lunge, cannot bend, and cannot turn, and basically push and pull correctly, that means they cannot, they are not really activating 100% of their nervous system. So let's break it down even to just one movement. If we know that an athlete does not know how to squat correctly and lunge correctly and bend correctly, like a deadlift, then we know it is basically scientifically impossible, because we never know for sure 100%. We always say with science, the problem is 50% of it is wrong, but we just don't know what 50% that is. But right now, we know that if you can't do those movements, then it is impossible to truly optimize on the movement, if you will, from your belly button down. Now, if we think about an open stance forehand, a lunge, a closed stance forehand, another lunge, when we're serving, basically a squat, all of these movements, all of these specific strokes, if you will, are coming from basic archetype movements. And if we have not taught our athletes to do them, if we have not learned to do them ourselves, then how can we expect our athletes to go to the very, very, very top level? Now, we have many athletes in all sports that are playing at the highest level and still are not moving correctly. And we might say, okay, well then if they can do it, then is movement in this case really that important, or is it more important to focus on the specific sport-specific movements? Well, I would say one thing. Let's take Ronaldo for an example, because we know when Ronaldo sprints, his technique is terrible, yet he's faster than everybody on the field. Okay, cool. But if Ronaldo, and I know this is a tennis webinar, but this is a specific example because you can YouTube this one and you can see when Ronaldo was sprinting in some scientific show, I think it took place in England, his technique was terrible, but yet he was still almost as fast as I think it was the world champion or someone that medaled in the Olympics. So why would we focus on fixing that technique? He's already the best. Sure, the thing is if you're a Ferrari and you're playing with a bunch of Toyotas, of course you're gonna be faster than everybody. But that doesn't mean you need to always have your parking brake up as you're out there on the court, in this case, against those Toyotas when you're just actually smoking all of your joints because, in this car analogy, your parking brake is up. So we can still put that thing down. You can play at a higher level even easier. So in this Ronaldo case, if we taught him how to sprint correctly, he'd be even faster, it'd be less wear and tear on his joints, and he'd play longer, he'd need less power to create even more strength, if you will. I said that a bit backwards. But he would be able to be a better athlete easier, and then when his career starts coming to an end, he would be healthier, he would be happier, he would be more fit, he would have less injury, and he would be able to live a longer life pain-free. So hopefully he can still do that. Hopefully all of our athletes can. But now, after that introduction, let's go into some of these videos and learn what we can do to make sure that we do. So one of the first things I like to go over is why movement is important. Now, there's a skill set we like to talk about, a topic called task dominance. And we took this from Dr. Kelly Starr, a world famous physical therapist that really took this concept and he brought it down to a very simple example. And that example would be if you made a grilled cheese sandwich, but you burnt the house down, would you consider that a success? You've got your grilled cheese sandwich, but you don't have a house anymore. Well, we might be laughing, we might think that's a ridiculous example, but how many times do we actually do that? In tennis, we say, yeah, you know, my shoulder hurts a little bit, but I can hit one more forehand, I only have one more tournament, I need to win this match, you know, we've got team events and I've got to play for my team. You just kind of keep going, you get there, you win the match, you're like, yes, okay, I got that point, I'm in the next 15,000, I'm the next 10,000, wherever you are, I made it through qualies. But now you need the ibuprofen, you need all this stuff because your shoulder, your knee, your hip, fill in the blank, is hurting you. So yes, you won the match, but did you really? Because you got the point, but right now you're kind of kicking the can down the road until something eventually is going to fall apart. Now, if I were to, let's use a car example again. If your check engine light were to come on in your car and you would see it would come on, you'd say, okay, you know what? I'm going to go to the mechanic. You'd go to the mechanic, say, hey man, my check engine light came on. Can you please take a look at it? And if he was like, yeah, you know what? Went into the car and just unplugged the sensor and the light went off, you would by no way high five him, thank him, and then move on. You would say, yo, actually, hold on a second, man. Please check what is going on with my engine because I don't want my car to blow up when I'm driving down the road. Maybe you need oil. Maybe, I don't know, man, your engine's gonna catch on fire. You don't know until he does the proper diagnosis and figures out what is going on. However, if you're hitting that forehand and that pain comes, or you're going into that serve and you're getting that impingement in your shoulder, then why would we then say, okay, you know what? Either A, I need to make it through this match, the task dominance, you get the task done, or then you say, okay, you know what? I can use ibuprofen, Panadol, aspirin, Tylenol, fill in the blank for wherever you're coming from with that thing that's gonna numb the sensation of pain so you can continue. That makes absolutely no sense. You're going and you're hitting that ball. Your body is telling you, hey, listen, something is wrong here. This hurts. Please stop doing it and find out what's going on, like that check engine light in your car, which you would go to the mechanic for. However, here, you're just unplugging the light by taking that whatever you want to take. So then the sensation is numb, you don't feel it, the pain is gone, and it allows you to do exactly what you were doing, which was causing that pain before. Yeah, you get away with it right now, the task dominance, but there is no free lunch. By basically unplugging the lights and deciding not only to drive down the road but go twice as fast, you're eventually gonna go right into a wall, and then we're gonna wonder, man, why does my shoulder hurt? Why does my knee hurt? Why does my hip hurt? Yeah, you know what? You're gonna see your local physician or whoever, and they're gonna say, you know what? You are a pro tennis player. This is very normal. You're X years old. You should just take a break, and this is the life of a pro athlete. But is it the life of a pro athlete? Is it the life of a college athlete? Or is it just what happens when we don't take care of our body? We don't change the oil in our engine, we never rotate our tires, and we drive that thing down the Autobahn, the German highway, which has no speed limit, like a bat out of hell, and then the thing falls apart and we blame the car company? That makes absolutely no sense. So that next time you're putting that ibuprofen in your mouth, or you're deciding to hit that ball and go through that tournament and just continue on, ask yourself, if that makes sense. Now, of course, if you or your athlete or your tennis player or whoever needs to continue, I understand that. Pro sports are not easy. College tennis is not easy. Being a high school athlete that's playing a high level of tennis, we must continue. But we must ask ourselves, if we are guilty of the task dominance, that is okay. But we need to be aware of it, because if we're not aware of it, we're not gonna find a solution to fix it long term. All right, so now I'm gonna break through a couple videos, because we need to learn two very important laws, if you will. One is the law of external rotation, and the other one is the law of internal rotation. Or you can say the law of external rotation in flexion and the law of internal rotation in extension. So I'm gonna break to these two different videos right now, and then we're gonna come back and discuss the importance of them.
So understanding the law of external rotation is very easy, because what that states is when a joint is in flexion, we believe that this external rotation is the stable position. And so what we mean by that is actually very easy to show. Imagine if I were to take my fist and I were to put it under my shirt, and through this, I would want to then make the shirt as tight as I can around my fist. I will get to a certain point where it won't work anymore. And the only way I can actually increase this tightness is if I add some rotation into it, and then it becomes tighter. You can see my fist, you can see the material around my hand gets tighter. Now, the reason this is so important is because as our joints get this torque within them, it allows the joint to be more stabilized, and also the position of our position to be held better. Because if we always have the heat on inside our house and there's always a window cracked, a lot of that heat is going to escape. Well, within our body, that heat is stability and strength. So if we don't have this torque system working in our favor, then we are losing some of that heat or strength, if you will, within our system. And my personal belief is, one, obviously with an athlete, this is very important, because we need as much strength as possible, not only to get the job done, whatever they're doing, but to keep them injury free. However, if you always have that window cracked in your house, your heat bill is going to go up, and eventually things are going to start breaking down because they're overworking, just like your body. So if we're always losing this torque, if you will, and we're losing a little bit of that strength, this will eventually lead to these overuse injuries, which end up breaking down, like our shoulder or our knee or our hip. And the problems that end up coming as we get older, and we just relate with age and then begin using medications and braces, when really it's just kind of a breakdown of the system, because we're not understanding exactly how we should be using it. So the law of external rotation, as I said in the beginning, is when something is in flexion, we believe the external rotation, so turning it out, is a stable position. And something that's very interesting with this is, if you've ever seen a movie, or if you've ever been in a fight, or you ever did any type of sport like martial arts or judo or whatever, you will realize that if you were to grab somebody by the collar, you always externally rotate out, and you don't really even think about it. So why, when we would grab somebody, would we automatically want to turn out like that, and not, for example, stay straight or turn in? Well, obviously our nervous system, our body understands the way in which it works, and it wants the most stable position, so it understands the movement that needs to be done in order to hold as much strength as possible. Now, if you think about other things like doors, well, cars that don't have buttons anymore. Everything, you basically always turn outside when you're in this flexion position. So while that is very interesting for our arms, I think it's even more important to relate it to our hips, because as we go into a squat position, this is actually something we call closed chain, and which that means movement-wise is that we are moving, we are not moving something open. So an open chain exercise would be my knee, for example, coming in the air because my foot is now no longer connected to the ground, where a closed chain would be like a squat where my feet stay to the ground, my body moves against the ground, but my hips are still going into flexion. So again, we would agree that this is flexion of the hip. However, when I squat down, it is actually the same thing. My hips continue to go into flexion. Well, if we believe that in flexion, a joint should externally rotate, that means as I go down, my hips are going into flexion. That means my hips, as they rotate, should pull my knees outside a little bit. Now, the interesting thing about this is if we kind of just apply a bit of common sense to it, and I have one leg, my body, and another leg, as my body wants to drop down, my knees have to get out of the way. So it would also make sense that as I drop down, now I didn't say my feet turn out, I said my knees naturally go out. So one of the coaching cues we have is shove your knees out. And this is terrible because it doesn't make any sense. So I should say one of the bad coaching cues we have, because we don't want to shove our knees out. However, we don't want to block them in this unnatural motion where they should track over the knee, as we are often told. We want to allow the body to move how it wants to naturally move. So if my hips go into flexion and we believe the law of external rotation is the stable position, that means with my hips being about shoulder width apart, as I drop down, my knees will naturally want to drop out a little bit. Now, this is a very interesting position, because if any of you have kids or have ever watched any kids play with something on the ground, investigate a toy, pet a dog, or even a Sherpa in the mountains, someone from a culture where they sit very often on the ground, you will always realize that their body drops in between their knees. This is because for them, it's part of their culture to always sit. They have the mobility and the range of motion to do it, but it's also natural for that body, for the body, to want to follow this law of external rotation in flexion, because that is the stable position. So now learning about the law of torque in extension is very interesting, because it ends up being the exact opposite of what it was in flexion. So the law of torque in flexion is that external rotation is the stable position. And we had a few examples with the squat and the grabbing someone by the collar, for example. However, in extension, it's the exact opposite. So in extension, we want to go into internal rotation. And some fantastic natural movement patterns in which we do this would be when we jump. So you can probably see this in the other camera better. As I jump, usually I naturally want to bring my arms in, and then funny enough, bring my arms out as I come out. If you've ever noticed when people run and they look really funny running down the road, that's usually because they're not following the law of torque. So as you run, if you look at a good runner, not only are they in line with their body, but often they have this internal rotation position of their shoulder here. Then as they come up, they have this slight external rotation, because this is then allowing their shoulders and their upper spine to keep that natural torque position, which is then stabilizing their upper body as they run. And if you noticed in my jumping position, as my arms turn in because I'm in extension, you notice that my knees happen to come out a little bit because my hips go into flexion. So it might be a bit confusing at first to see everything, but you will realize as you start to allow your body to follow these natural patterns, they one, want to follow them, two, you start to move better, and three, you realize that even though there's just the two patterns, it gets a bit confusing at the beginning, but your body always wants to follow them. So another fantastic example of this law of torque and extension is when we're doing tricep dips. So I was a fitness coach for a lot of for young kids for a while, and anytime they wanted to do the crab walk on the ground or a tricep dip, they always wanted to turn their hands out because it was easier, and they always asked why they were not allowed to do it. Well, now that you understand the law of torque and extension being internal rotation, we now understand that this is the more stable position for the shoulder. Yes, of course, it might be harder for the muscles, but we want to use the muscles to stabilize ourselves, keep the joint in the best position, and we do this by following that law of internal rotation and extension. And also when we run, we notice that our leg often will internally rotate as we push off from that striking pattern, and that is because our hip is then also in extension. So again, to recap, in flexion, the law of torque is external rotation, and in extension, the law of torque is internal rotation, and that is with every joint. And we will see that very often with the hips and the shoulders, because as we like to say in physio land, these are the two major engines of your body.
All right, so let's start with the law of external rotation. You saw my example with the squat and how the knees need to come out. I'm also going to put in a second, how to actually do the squat. But before we talk about that, or before I show you that, I want to talk about why it's important. We mentioned, or I mentioned before, that we now know that if you're not able to go completely deep down into a squat with correct technique, then that will affect every portion of your squat-like motion. So we used to say in basketball, players need to drop all the way down, even though they would never shoot a free throw like that. Well, we can carry that directly into tennis, because if you guys have split stance position, your split stance is a squat. And if anything, it's actually quite often, sometimes quite a deep squat, and we're not technically squatting correct, you're actually more on the balls of your feet. So not only do you need to understand the correct squat, you then need to change it to make it more applicable to your sport, to being on the baseline, to wanting to explode forward. So if you can't do a normal squat to a full deep depth below 90, then there's absolutely no way you're going to be in the split stance in the correct position to really optimize the speed to explode to either one, a short ball, or two, to a volley. So that is one example. The second one would be if you're going to serve. As you serve, you are breaking basically at the hips. So not only are you doing a squat-like motion, you're also doing a hip hinge motion, which we're going to go over here in a bit also. So if you're not able to do these two movements, then right away you are what do you say, not as efficient at the split stance, which is basically everything in tennis, and then the serve or the overhead. These are two crucial movements that you will not optimize because you don't know the basic movements of how to squat and how to hip hinge. So let's take a break and let's watch both those videos right now, starting with the squat and then going to the hip hinge.
All right, so the correct and effective squat. Make sure you guys watch my video on the law of external rotation of a joint in flexion. So if that makes no sense, make sure to go back to that video, watch that, because then this squat video will make much more sense. However, moving forward, what we want to do is we want to make sure our feet are about shoulder width apart, basically straight. We're able to have about 10 degrees of them turned out, but when we say this, often people do that, so I usually like to say straight. And from here, what we want to do is we want to lower ourselves down, and as we go down, remember that law of flexion and external rotation, and that will bring our knees out a little bit. And when our knees come out, we want to make sure we're not dumping our torque. We want to make sure we keep that tension in the lower back, and from here, really be able to get deep and hold that position. If we notice that our ankle wants to collapse, that is why starting with shoes is okay, because it's going to have that higher heel raise, if you will, and it's going to support our Achilles. Because what happens when our Achilles is tight and we squat, we go into this duck position, and that's not what we want, because it's not good for our ankle collapsing, our knee collapsing, and also the mechanics of our lower body. But we need to make sure that as we go down, we're able to get that external rotation, keep that neutral position in our arch, go to where we're able to, and then come back up. So in this position, you realize that my knees are coming out, not too much, my feet are staying on the ground, and I am choosing to go about 90 degrees. If your mobility allows it, or you have your shoes on and it gives you a little bit more mobility in the back of the ankle, you can go lower. It's okay if you get a bit of that butt wink, but we want to make sure you don't dump that torque. That is the correct position. If we go forward with the knees, remember in that test I spoke about within the law of flexion, Our knees come in, often we break at the ankle and we have no power there. So that is why we want the knees to come out. Not only is it a more stable position, but if we've got our left leg, our body, and our right leg, our knees need to get out of the way to allow the body to drop. Again, if you need help, put something under your heels temporarily. You should not be doing this as a crutch, or have your shoes on to give you a little bit more support in that ankle and take some of the range of motion issues out of the Achilles, and then address it with either the thinking man stretch or the Achilles box stretch. All right, so now we've got the deadlift position, and the deadlift position is actually very important because it's not only lifting weights from this position, hence the name deadlift, but also when we pick something up from the ground. So often the mistake that people make when they pick something up from the ground is they drop way too low into a squat position and stand back up. And we know from watching little kids move that when we want to investigate something, check it out, we do a squat motion. However, when we want to use our power and lift something, we want more of a deadlift position. So what we need to do is follow the same pattern of the squat. So if you have not watched a squat yet, I suggest you do that so you can learn about that external rotation within our hips and why that drives our knees a little bit outwards. The difference is, which you'll be able to see it in this other camera a little bit better, is as I go down into this deadlift position, as if I'm picking my kid up, picking a box up, anything off the ground for that fact, as I go down, I don't drop so low with the butt like I would be in a squat. I keep my back straight, I keep my shoulders back, I don't want them to fall forward, and as I come down, I'm doing that screwing motion into the floor, which I spoke about in the external rotation video, and as I go down, you realize that my back is staying straight, but my butt is staying higher, because this is allowing a hip hinge from this position, and me to stand up more straight, using the power of my butt and my hamstrings to pick something up. So again, if you have not seen the squat video, or if you've not seen the external rotation video, or the law of torque, that is what you want to watch to really understand the depth of this movement. But what we're going to do from here in the deadlift position is we basically want to make sure we're screwing the feet into the ground, we're keeping the butt a little bit higher, it's not dropping too low into like a hybrid position of the squat and the deadlift together. We want that butt to remain high, the shoulders to remain back, the head is also part of our spine, so we don't want to break at the neck, we want to keep that spine nice and elongated and straight, and that is how we would pick something up. So if you had a child, it would be more from this position, standing up like that.
Alright, so I don't know if you've stood up yet and tried to do that squat, but often when people do, they say, okay, feet shoulder width apart, that's great. Okay, shoulder width apart. They should basically be straight. They can actually be about 10 degrees turned out, but we usually don't say that because then people turn like a duck. But maybe if you went down, you realize, wow, you know what? That's actually not possible. My hips stopped me. Most people, the Achilles stopped them because of the heel drop in your shoe. Many tennis shoes are quite bad because we're landing on our heel quite often when we deaccelerate, which is okay to have a big heel drop, but then we need to take care of the fact that our Achilles is probably going to get a bit tight. So then when you try to squat down, you realize you're going into this really broken position. That's okay, because if we didn't know it was broken, we can't fix it. So I always say the bigger the disaster you or your player is, the better. Because if they're playing at that level and they're technically a disaster, that's fantastic. Because imagine what we will do, or you can do for them, or they can do for themselves, or you can do for yourself, when we actually address these things, make it better, and allow you to play 500% better than you're already playing right now. So in the link somewhere below, I'm going to add some exercises, and you're going to be able to do these things, these mobility exercises, stretching exercises, to start to really open up your hips and your Achilles. So one's going to be called the three-way hip mobility, one is a three-way hip stretch, and the other one is going to be called the thinking man stretch, and this is going to be for the Achilles. And as you do these, and then you stand back up and you try to squat, you will realize automatically you're already able to go in this deeper position. And if you do these continuously and you stay continuous with this stuff, you do it weekly, you will realize that when you're on the tennis court, when you're in that stance, not only do you feel better, does it feel more natural, but you just feel more loose and you're able to move, and believe it or not, you feel more explosive, even with better range of motion, because now you're putting the oil back in your engine, you're taking care of your body, and your body's going to respond by being able to perform better. All right, so now let's do the law of external rotation, upper body. So we already had that example of when I would grab grab somebody by the collar, but now we need to go over the push-up. So the push-up, I'm gonna go ahead and play for you right now.
All right, understanding the importance of the mechanism behind a push-up is very important because it follows one of the natural laws of torque of external rotation. Now, in the name push-up, you understand that it involves a pushing type motion. However, many of us, when we're doing our push-up, are doing it from this 90 degree angle of our shoulders, which is not 100% correct. Because if we were to push somebody like this, it would not work. We always have this pushing mechanism where we prepare the shoulders and then we push whatever we need to away. So the push-up should be the same thing. Now, very similar to the squat, the mistake being that we move at the knees before the hips, it also often happens in the push-up that we believe we break at the elbows before we move the shoulders, and that's incorrect. So actually, just like the squat and what we do with our feet, we want to do the same thing with our hands in the push-up, and that is kind of try to rotate our arms out or turn our hands against the ground so we activate that shoulder and then we move into the push-up, and you will notice that your shoulders or your elbows are always in the similar position. We're not too deep like a tricep push-up, but we're not in this impingement-like position within our shoulders. So as we get in this position, you might be able to see in the other camera here a bit better. What I'm gonna do is I'm going to stay in this position. You're going to realize my feet are together. That allows me to squeeze my butt a little bit, stabilize the hips and spine. But before I drop down, I'm going to activate my shoulders. And this then turns my elbows into that position, which matches the push-like motion. Now, if this is not possible, we have a few different techniques or variations we can do. We can either drop down slowly in this position, and then roll back up like a fish, which is okay because we're working on that eccentric motion, that elongation of the muscle that allows us to become stronger like that. Or we can set the knees down. Now, the only problem with setting the knees down is that it really kind of prevents us from activating the hips and stabilizing the spine 100%. However, if we're doing this to become stronger, that's also okay. What we want to make sure we don't do is change the position within our push-up, because the difference between our knees being down and not is only that, our knees being down. Nothing else should be modified by any means. So we should still drop down with a neutral spine. We should have the activated shoulders. The elbows should be dropping down, not at 90 degrees, and just like the position from a normal push-up, because we are using the law of flexion and external rotation to have that stable position within our shoulder so we don't compromise our movement, our position, or our strength.
Now that you've seen that, you can understand that why the elbows need to be down and how it's a simple understanding of technique with why that is wrong and this is correct. However, there's also something on top which I think is very special. Actually, two things. One is completely tennis specific. The better you get at your push-up, the better you get at a chest press, the stronger you get in the chest, I promise you, your forehand will be huge. I have done this with so many ATP players, so many WTA players, so many junior players, and it's never not happened. Get your chest strong, keep your range of motion, make sure to keep that balance, focus on it. But as you get better at a chest press, as you get better at a push-up, your forehand will become harder, the ball will go deeper, and it will stay like that longer and more consistent. The other one, which is really for everybody, is this is a natural way to fire your rotator cuff. So I've done so many videos on the external rotation with the band, the 90 degrees with the band, the empty cans. Those are okay, but we are 95% the same as the cavemen and women. So hundreds of thousands of years ago, we didn't have these things, but I'm sure we also still had our injuries. So what did we do in order to strengthen our rotator cuff, either A, to prevent the injury, or B, to get it back if we did, I don't know, injure it when we were building a house or running away from a dinosaur? We didn't use TheraBand. What we did was we activated our muscles in natural ways. Well, in that law of external rotation, when you're going into, flexion in this external rotation, well, in that push-up, we spoke about activating the shoulders first, and then that aligns your arms in the correct position and it stabilizes your shoulder. What do you think is stabilizing your shoulder? That's your rotator cuff. You're naturally activating that rotator cuff. So through that, these natural exercises are fantastic. So I'm going to put a few links down below of hanging is a fantastic one. We often talk about how much we sit now and how we used to never sit back in the day. Well, what about hanging? We used to like swing from trees and hang all over the place. Guys, it sounds funny, but we're 95% the same as the cavemen and women, like genetically. So we need to hang, and we never do that anymore. Don't even think about sitting and how much we sit and don't stand anymore, whatever. That's also a disaster. But just think about this hanging position. Nonetheless, look what happens in the flexion position of my shoulders. I get this external rotation. So I'm gonna put the video below where we can hang and where we can go into a handstand, because to introvert our body is huge. Because again, we need to use our body, or if you don't use it, you lose it. So we're always upright, which is normal, that's fine. But think about inverting yourself. Think about getting your head underneath your feet and then how your body will adapt to it. If you feel like you're gonna faint, if your blood goes to your head and you can't control it or handle it, well, it goes back to that better athlete. If I clone you and I take the clone of you and I get him to master the handstand, not only is he gonna strengthen his rotator cuff, is he gonna learn this law of external rotation and flexion, but he's gonna become better at being in a unique position. He's gonna strengthen his nervous system. He's gonna have a better feeling of his body. And then God forbid, if you even wanna take it more tennis specific, if he's out on that court and he's sliding and he's in a weird position, you think as he loses his balance, it's gonna affect him as much as it would affect you when this dude's been up, or this girl, or this guy, whoever's been upside down the entire time when he's training in the fitness studio and you haven't been one time. We need to make you a better athlete, and we need to tune your body to the highest level spec we can, because that is what's going to make you a better tennis player. All right, so now let's get an example of the internal rotation rule. So the law of extension, the joint, the shoulder in this case would be an internal rotation. And in the video that we showed, I don't remember off the top of my head, so I'm going to go through it right now live, if you want to say that. But when we run, imagine our hand, when we have good technique, our arm is internally rotating. It's like on the track when they hand off the baton, it just happens to be in the natural position. And then as we come out, we're always like this. So this is a huge advantage when you're on the tennis court, because if you have a two-hand backhand and you pull all the way on one side of the court and you have to sprint all the way to the other, Serena Williams, please pay attention. If you cannot run all the way across the court like this, it will really help you out. Now, obviously, if you've got to play the ball, I get it. You need to prepare for the shot and get down so you can either hit it closed or open. I get it. But if you're running 15 meters, try to run. You've got this massive lever in your hand that's going to make you faster, and then you can use the proper technique. So getting back on track, the law of external rotation, look what happens to my elbow as I run. So if you're running like this, not a good idea. When I jump, look what happens when I come down. If I want to come down, my arms automatically naturally want to come in. What happens when I come up? Look at that, they externally rotate. And a great one, which I'm gonna show a video here, it's an Instagram video, so this one has no words, so I'll make it short, but you can see I'm doing the crab walk, and my arms are going to be internally rotated, so not only am I in the correct position in extension, but that also, again, is now firing my rotator cuff in a natural way. All right, so the last piece I wanna go over is to educate you guys a little bit on posture and how easy it is to fix, but how crucial it is to optimize your performance. So first thing we need to understand is how the body works. Because we are 95% the same as our cavemen and cavewomen, we are basically, right now, as we watch this, as I film this, as we listen to this, ready to run away from a dinosaur right there. Just wham, if a dinosaur were to come, we could go. It sounds ridiculous, but we're 95% the same as our ancestors. So we have these systems built in us that we can either take advantage of or let take advantage of us. Now, with that being said, that system that I'm talking about is that our eyes will always remain, for the most part, there's always outliers, but the eyes will always remain over the toes. So that means my neighbor, for example, is handicapped, and he is like this. So he lives on his own, great guy, goes to the grocery store, has his groceries, and when he's coming back, he's very slow because he's not in an optimal position to move. But His eyes are over his toes. That's what allows him to continue. That's what allows him to move. So we are the same. Now, we're usually not so exaggerated, but the problem is when it's not that exaggerated and our eyes remain over our toes, we are not able to understand our postural issues. So with that being said, the way the body does that is usually when one joint were to go back, the other one would go forward. Now, I'm always in all dark and my room's all gray and white. These are my brand colors, so I apologize. But let's see if we can hopefully see it. I'll see it after the fact when I'm done. If my knees were to lock out, because this is how often we like to stand, because our body's trying to do us a favor and be efficient, but we do not want to stand with our knees locked, so try not to, but your body will try to help you and do it anyways. But point being, when my knees lock, look what happens to my hips. You can see my hips go forward. As one joint goes back, the other one wants to go forward. So as my hips go forward, my back is gonna wanna go back. But my shoulders aren't gonna go forward because I've got ribs. So what they're gonna do is they're gonna hike up and over. So ladies, if you see that you have this like cliff-like shoulder, that's because the pec minor, the small muscle that connects to your shoulder blade, is getting tight and it's pulling you back in balance. Here, guys, you also have it too, but usually due to all your push-ups and all that stuff, it rolls forward too, so it's actually forward and tilted. It just looks like we have bro shoulders. So if we, as physios or manual therapists or whoever, trainers, strength coaches, try to bring the shoulders back, the body's gonna basically just tell you to piss off the nervous system and it's gonna put them right back. So you're gonna end up doing this shoulder dance because as we bring them back, the body is out of balance, so they're gonna roll back this direction. Same thing if we stand a lot on our right hip or if we're serving a lot to, I'm left-handed, so to the left, I'm gonna slowly start to shift this way, so my body is gonna wanna start to bend back in order to keep my eyes over my toes. So now we know the problem, but how do we fix it? That, boys and girls, is actually very simple, because what we need to focus on is the short or the long tissue. I should actually ask the question, but you guys can't answer, or at least I can't hear it. So let's give an example. Let's say, remember I told you my eyes will remain over my toes. I'm gonna exaggerate the postural issue here so we can see it, and then you're gonna be able to decide what we should work on. So let's say my head is like this, and you see me and you're like, wow, Dave, dude, your posture, man, like, do you have some neck issues? I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't see what you're talking about because my eyes are over my toes. So you might come to me and be like, hey, let me help you out here. You know, let me see if I can like massage this area. So like some mobility, right? And say, okay, well, does that hurt? I might be like, yeah, you know, I really feel that. And then you might push here and I might say, yeah, I feel that, but more on this side actually. And well, you know, we kind of are taught to learn that, oh, okay, well, whatever hurts more must help. So we say you're kind of pushing and praying. You're pushing on something that obviously hurts and hoping that it will get better. Well, in this case, massage will do two things. It will temporarily relieve the pain and it will elongate tissue. So if you work on me here more than here, that's gonna make it feel better because it will temporarily alleviate the pain. But then it might elongate the tissue even more. So then it's gonna go even farther. So I'm gonna leave my office high-fiving you because I feel great temporarily, but my neck is even worse. And then I wonder, a few hours later, next day, 3 days later, why my issue always comes back. Where, if you were to see me like this and understand, wait a second, massage in this case is gonna elongate tissue, so make it longer, and take the pain away, well, why don't I work here, and eventually we're gonna actually elongate this tissue and solve the root of the problem versus always just kind of taking care of it. So now, obviously, this is not always so easy to see. The point of this example is we need to understand that often, we like to say, it is the victim that makes all the noise. So if someone takes somebody's purse or wallet or watch or whatever, the person's gonna start screaming, saying, hey, someone took whatever, and then everybody looks at that person, the thief is going to continue to take everything else. The body is the same way. So if someone is like this, or if my neighbor is like this, or if I can see the fact that I'm kind of shifting over this way, well, then I know that the bottom left side of my back here is probably the tight side. Then I need to say, okay, well, maybe in this case, because my head is hanging on the tissue, I can feel it here, so it's okay to work there to release some of the tension. That's fine, so I feel better. But I need to know as a therapist that this is the root of the problem. So I focus on both sides, maybe this one just longer than this one, so I can start to undo the problem. So right there is another reason why the movement and mobility concept is so important. So even if you feel that you've gone through these movement practices and you're moving much better now, you're able to squat, you're able to lunge, your deadlift is good, your bracing technique makes sense, that's fantastic. But we're not supposed to, here's a little doozy for you, sit for more than 30 minutes a day. That 30 minutes should be on the floor, and we should change our position every 2 minutes. So as long as we're not following those rules and laws, which we never will be able to in 2019, we need to understand that we're kind of that tiger in the zoo, so to speak, right? We're living in an environment that works, but it's not our natural environment. So because of that, like we do for the tiger in the zoo, we do what we can to make it as natural as possible, and we change things. Since he's in New York, let's say, he's not in the apartment, he's got the area that he needs. You need to do the same. And by understanding these laws of mobility, you will get why when you're driving like this all the time, or if you're right-handed and you're sitting like this, you're typing like that, that these areas are going to become short, and we need a template, we need a program, we need a way to understand how we can start undoing this stuff. So the exercises I gave you throughout the webinar for opening up the hips, for strength, or for lengthening the Achilles, these are issues, these are exercises that will open everything up, and then what you can do as a player or as a coach, you can understand where the tight side is, you can have the help of a therapist or someone that understands the body, see the tightness and understand how to apply this theory to yourself or your athlete.